Welcome to Finance Today with RSFA. You're with Cam Sinclair and Rod Schubert. I was going to say Sam Sinclair there, but I caught myself. That's a really good start to today's podcast. For our listeners, we are on to our third act, The Prestige. We started with The Pledge being our first act and the second act being The Turn. So The Prestige for us doesn't quite fit perfectly into The Prestige, the movie. However, our version is the execution of what we're trying to achieve via the financial advice that we're providing. So probably a little bit more mundane than the Prestige movie, but certainly there's some cross-pollination. So just to bring it to our listeners' attention and a reiteration of the last example that we're going to talk about further today. So just a quick run over. So one of the examples was three properties with one of our clients that's approached us for refix advice. The situation was the client had an owner-occupied property, 700K lending, and 2 million was the value of that property. We had an investment property, 600K lending, 1.4 million was the value. And we're saying that the value was at least 1.4 million. And the other variable was we had a 600K loan with a value of 1 million, and that property was purchased a couple of years ago, 750K, with cash back provided of $4,200. So that's the cash that the bank gives you conditionally. And if you leave them within a certain period, they retract that. So 3 years is the most common period, but there is 4 year periods out there. Feel free to revisit or visit our previous podcast for some more detail on that matter. So the recommendation that we made in this case to this client with the three properties, with the one bank, was to keep the property that was valued at around about 1 million, but we assumed it was 1 million or more in our example, that settled 2 years ago. And that property was purchased at 750K originally. The client that we were dealing with had no particular issues with their bank, so they didn't dislike their bank. They didn't feel the need to remove everything on the spot from that particular bank. So the pragmatic advice from our point of view was to advise them to keep that mortgage with the existing bank. Cashback was also provided of $4,200 against that 600K loan originally, and therefore that would have been retracted in full had they refinanced that property. Because the lending was at 60% or under with the $1 million value, 600K loan, we were able to fathom that the incumbent would be able to approve that lending staying with them. Remembering that we had done some servicing investigation and the loan would service with a new bank, new banks, and therefore it should service with the existing bank. So what that did was it still achieved what we needed it to, and that's to split up the properties to different mortgagees, which alleviated mortgagee saturation risk consumer style, and we were to refinance the other two properties, the one valued at 2 million, the owner occupied, and the other rental property purchased several years ago as well, that was valued at $1.4 million plus with a, what was the lending amount against that? I think it was 600K, or it could have been 800K.
600, yeah.
600 there, Cam, thank you. And yep. Just a welcome there to Cam. So, Cam, what do you think about that in terms of the prestige part or the execution part for our viewers, which haven't really understood? They've understood a lot of things about advice so far, our listeners today, but they haven't quite understood. How does this all happen?
Yeah, cheers, Rod. Thanks for that recap on our previous episodes. So, somewhat similar to a prequel to a movie, the initial advice given to a client just based on an initial phone call can be tentative as we haven't yet done a deep dive. Advice is sort of cemented and more formalized at the conclusion of the process, and that's once we've understood the pre-approvals that any lenders have given us, the limitations, if any. And yeah, so once all the pieces to the puzzle are in line, that's when our advice can become more concrete and accurate moving forward. So with any advice given by myself, you, or Anne or Ian, who are the other two amazing mortgage advisors here at RSFA, there's quite a lot of background work and sort of nitty gritty stuff that needs to get into. And I'll just go through that process and just make sure that everyone understands the fairly generic routine that goes through every application, no matter what the solutions needed or what the advice given, the process is usually fairly similar. So we'll start off any relationship with a client just with a phone call or email, just have a chat, try build some rapport and sort of get a relationship off the ground, try understand what their goals are, what they're trying to achieve, and also any potential events or happenings in their life that could restrict any solution moving forward as well. That's always really, really helpful to understand. Although I have a good pipeline of my own clients, I also work with Rod's clients quite closely, and Rod and I collaborate really well on those deals, as he has more of the understanding and the relationship with the client, and I do the nitty gritty work and the client contact, and just make sure that everything runs smoothly. So it's a pretty good team effort, I would say. So generally, we require a higher level overview or picture of the client scenario. And to understand this, we ask for documentation. Generally, this is fairly basic requirements. So bank statements, pay slips, any deposit requirements, although with refinances, this isn't generally an issue as they have some equity in their properties. But for new purchases, we'll need KiwiSaver or savings or gifting evidence. We also have some really good and kind of ingenious softwares on our end just to make this document submission process a lot easier. So bank statements are kind of the key one, as logging into your online banking portal and downloading PDFs of the months that we require can be quite tedious. And also, some people just aren't too familiar with their online banking apps, and that's completely understandable. It's not something that many people spend much time in every day. So we have software that automatically sort of sieves out your bank statements and sends it right to my email, and that's everything we need right there. We also use DocuSign, we use that for our scope of advice, and this really helps because, especially these days, not a lot of people have printers, so printing and signing documents can be quite a hassle unless you want to go down to your local library. So we use DocuSign for that, and that just means that you can sign it online and it's all accepted by the banks, making everyone's lives a lot easier. We don't usually send out generic templates, so any template that does get sent out is individualized and will be formatted to ask for things specific to your scenario. So it'll never be a one-size-fits-all approach, as we've talked about in previous episodes. We do a lot of the heavy lifting in this stage. So that's the application compilation. So compiling the application, that's definitely the most intense part of the process. So that's compiling all the documents. We'll also get every client we have to fill out an online application. And again, that's basic info. So your name, your job, how long you've been there, and then sort of just typing in information that the documents also confirm. So it's kind of like a double authentication layer, I guess. So if you say you have 50K deposit, then we also need the documentation to prove it. And that's just for the banks to satisfy their requirements as well. The banks can be quite particular around ticking boxes, and that's why we try to be as thorough as possible on our end with regards to having the right months on bank statements, the right pay slips, so the most recent pay slips rather than 6 months ago, as a lot can happen in 6 months. So we find that by being as accurate and as, what's the word, sort of nitpicky, even though I've used that many times before, but by being nitpicky at the start of the process, we avoid delays heading forward, and most clients prefer it that way. Especially once clients have pre-approval, that's generally when offers are being presented on properties or auctions are being lined up. So you don't want to be messing around with supplying further information if you're 2 days out from an auction. That just adds stress into an already stressful time. Another thing that kind of thanks to COVID about our industry is that a lot of work is done via Zoom, phone and email these days. Obviously, the past 2 years haven't been great, and that's sort of exemplified the need for Zoom. And I think people have realized that actually by not having to sit in, especially if you're based in Auckland, sit in traffic for 20 minutes to meet someone for a 20-minute meeting, Zoom is actually a pretty nice alternative. And you still get that face-to-face contact with people, which is always nice, just to sort of understand their mannerisms, understand their personality, make sure that you as a client actually want to work with me. So yeah, just we have a few things that just make life a lot easier for any client that comes our way. So to summarize all of that, it's not the flashy part of the process. It's definitely where we roll our sleeves up and put in some elbow grease, but it's the hard work on this end that results in a seamless and painless process come time to purchase a house. And that's when we can just help you through that stressful time and make sure that everything's looking good. So Rod, back to you.
Yeah, totally, Cam. And, you know, purchasing a house or refinancing, our aim is always to make it seamless, and we'll be as transparent as possible where we see any possible pitfalls. We won't look to lead you down a garden path, so to speak, if we don't feel that the result that we're trying to achieve is one that is actually a practical possibility. So we definitely look to analyze your situation at least tentatively, like we've talked about, and provide advice at least tentatively, seeking a conclusion. And until we actually have your application with the bank or the banks, and we have a commercially presented offer from our providers, we're not able to formalize exactly what's going to happen, because essentially the banks have the money, they're the lenders, we're the advisors, and we're essentially your conduit to the banks. So I like to also use this analogy with my clients where, even though we're not solicitors, just want to make that clear, but we're the solicitor of the finance world. And that's probably the easiest way to understand things. And if you look at a situation where you've got, say, a prosecution lawyer, a defense lawyer, and the case is pretty equal, you know, there's evidence on both sides, probably a bit of a cliche in the criminal law, legal world, but, you know, you've got evidence on both sides. And if you had a really good defense attorney and you had maybe not such a good overworked Crown prosecutor, the case from the prosecution may not be as well presented as a well-paid defense lawyer. And in this case, with most of our main bank lending, we're not actually charging. Just to make it really transparent to our audience as well, the banks pay us commission for our work. And that is so that you don't have to pay fees. So it's actually a model that's worked well over time. And looking at that analogy with the lawyers, so when you're presenting a case, and this is in this case us presenting the information that you provide us to our banks, whether that be banks or non-banks for that matter, what we're looking to do is not say too much but not say too little. So in the case of, you know, use, and I'm not going to harp on too much about the analogy, but looking at the legal process, you know, your lawyer is not going to say, hey, listen, here's a murder weapon, we think you might have found it anyway. And it's also not about hiding information. So it's about the evidence that we've got that's presented to us, and looking to work with that evidence to present an application that puts your statement of position and what you're looking to do in the best possible light to our providers. So as part of our advice, I would say that we work closely with lawyers, accountants, real estate agents, other third parties like valuers, building inspectors, even to the point of we might be liaising with your house insurer, because we need to understand something that they've put in the policy. So without actually going through the process with us or another advisor or another process where, and it's particularly when you're in an advice role rather than maybe having dealt with the bank, where it could seem a little bit like going and making an order. at your local restaurant, you've asked for something, they've given it to you. So that's certainly what we're about to a certain extent, because we need to execute your order, but it's actually about a full holistic process where we're giving advice and executing, which is far different than just taking an order. In terms of those sort of conversations too, we always obtain the right privacy permission so that we're not suddenly obtaining the name of your accountant and sending them big long emails or your lawyer without your permission, which you might receive an invoice for, and you know, it'd be completely inappropriate. So we make sure that we act professionally during our dealings with you, obtain the right permissions. And actually what I've found in the past is if we're liaising with particularly a client, either by way of saying, hey, listen, do you want to copy and paste this, send it to your lawyer because I think this is where you need advice, or my preference personally is to actually be introduced to your lawyer or obtain correct permission to contact your lawyer and talk about them directly, usually copy you in just so you can oversee what's happening and obtain what we need to from your lawyer to help with the process or if help with some advice that's needed at that point or in the future as part of your ongoing financial needs. So Cam, anything to just add to that?
Yeah, so holistic is probably a word that you'll hear a million times if you listen to this podcast, but also further ones. And it's something that we do try and live up to. And personally, I think we do. And so that's, as Rod said, it's not just the fact that we can do or assist with mortgages, KiwiSaver, insurance, all of that stuff, but by having these professional relationships in the wider world of property and finance, that just adds to the holistic nature. So having these people that we can fully rely on and we trust with our clients, that's, to me, it's invaluable. So yeah, just holistic advisory is definitely what we aim to be, and we believe we're doing a pretty good job at it so far. So just recapping the second scenario then, a bit more straightforward, and this is sort of the precursor to the entanglement that the first client was in. So we've come up with the recommendation to top up the unoccupied for 150K, and this will be used as the deposit for the new investment property purchase of 750K, and the remaining 600,000 needed, we will go to another lender. So this is quite a different recommendation to the first scenario. Rod, can you tell the listeners if the process is any different behind the scenes?
No, actually the fundamentals are exactly the same. So this one's more basic in the sense that you've got one property, you've got good equity in that property. The bank can, subject to servicing, which we mentioned in previous episodes, would work. And that was, a very simple scenario versus the client with three properties tangled up. So the process, though, is the same in terms of the protocols around advice. We understand the client's need. And we also ask for pretty much the same information with most applications. So whether you're topping up or whether you're borrowing millions of dollars, the actual protocol, aside from individual requirements because of the type of employment that you've got, being self-employed or employed, if you've got more properties than one and one's rented, say it's not a batch tenancy agreement. So there is nuanced differences with what we ask for, but all the same, a checklist is going to be provided to each of these client examples. And we go through the same process when we're presenting the application in the best possible light to our lender or lenders. So two very different scenarios, but the same type of paperwork. So what happens when things don't go completely to plan? So even with the best intentions, even with the best defense attorney, yep, I've gone back to that analogy. We present the application to the bank. The banks, we give you some feedback that this is what we think is going to happen. Let's say that in the first example, the client with three properties, the servicing was a bit tighter, and maybe we felt that the application was a bit more marginal. We mentioned that the servicing was comfortable in a previous episode. So let's just take that example that it's not absolutely clear cut, we presented well, but we can only find one other lender to refinance a property or properties, and the existing bank has agreed to keep lending on their books. So in the first example where the servicing was comfortable, that particular client with three properties, we managed to find two other lenders and separate two properties out to alleviate more desaturation risk consumer style. And I know you might have heard that a few times, but we reiterate that just to give you a bit of a different feel of the scenario. And with this new scenario where the lending isn't as easily serviced, we only find one lender that is willing to refinance. So we go back to our client and say, yep, we've got some good news, but we've also got the challenge that we can't achieve exactly what we wanted to achieve. So taking that first example, and if you've listened to all of these episodes, you might be a little bit familiar with it now. We've got the show notes in the podcast. So what we're probably going to recommend, just going back to that example, is the retention of the investment property that was originally purchased at 750K with 600 debt against it, that was worth around about 1 million now. So looking to keep that with the existing bank, and then most probably refinancing both of the other properties to the bank that has offered finance, just remembering that only one other bank has offered finance. We haven't got any other offers, and therefore we're not able to split both properties to two different banks. So the options would be refinancing both properties to one bank or refinancing one property. From a financial upside point of view, given the lending was around about 1.5 million against the owner-occupied property and the investment property that those clients had held for several years, and you may have to refer to our show notes or previous episodes to just untap that example again. But essentially, there was lots of equity. The lending was approximately 1.5. I think it was an 800K and a 700K loan against those two properties. Therefore, a 0.7% cashback, notwithstanding there is actually some 1% offers out there at the moment, may not last for very long. But looking at 0.7, you'd be looking at over $10,500 cash, roughly, for refinancing both of those properties to that provider that has said yes. And the legal fees would be roughly, let's say $3,000. Don't quote me. Please make sure you talk to your own individual and preferred legal representation for a quote. But generally, it's around about $1,500 a refinance, give or take. So that would be the contingency plan to look at refinancing two properties. Yes, we don't get that full split of mortgagee saturation risk, but it does put us in that position where we've got a 3-year tenure on that cashback that the bank has provided. And they didn't have any immediate plans. They're talking about a business being a future plan. Wasn't sure, but it's something that they were thinking about, and also this world trip, which wasn't in the immediate future. So let's take advantage of that ability to split the properties at this point, but just not a full split of the properties, alleviating their full risk of any assessment of their position by the bank that they move the two properties to in the future. So yeah, I think I'll just leave it at that. That really explains the mortgagee saturation risk consumer style, where we get caught in a position where we don't have the ideal result, but we do have a result that is more advantageous than when our client walked in the door. And of course, we would talk to that client as well around future probabilities or future possibilities of what we might be able to do to help them in the future if we didn't achieve the ideal result this time, so that the client has a good understanding of the working relationship and what to expect in the future. So we're very, let's say, focused and very passionate about what we're doing. And this isn't the only subject that we cover, obviously, but it's one of those complex ones we'd like to get out of the way on podcasts that's actually really relevant to today's time and the Responsible Lending Act, as mentioned in a previous episode. Just over to Cam for any concluding comments.
Yeah, I just want to thank everyone for tuning in to these past four episodes, if you have done so. It's definitely a lot to understand and take in, especially for the untrained ear in this case. But yeah, it's definitely very important to understand this if you do have a portfolio of properties like the two imaginary clients that we've been talking about. And we're always here and happy to help if you have any questions or any concerns that you might be in one of these boats that we've been talking about. Definitely something that's fairly easy to remedy, and we're more than happy to help out. So yeah, on behalf of Rod, myself, and the whole of RSFA, we hope you tune into our further episodes on other topics in the future, and hope you learned something from this one.
Yeah, I'd just like to say to our listeners too, this is one of the more complex subjects that we'll go over in our podcast. So I look forward to something probably a little bit easier to digest as we get through podcasts. But, you know, we're going to have guests on from time to time as well. So stay tuned and look forward to catching up with you next time.